This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello and welcome to Biscuits with the Boss, a podcast series about Ted Lasso. I'm your host and new manager, Ed Lasso, Edwin Janes. With me are my co-host and new striker, Shawnee Rojas.
Hello.
Sean Roney.
That still doesn't make sense to you yet.
He hasn't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, that's true.
And Coach Beard, our producer, Alex Ward.
No Fight Club! Tighten up those lines!
Thank you for joining us in part two of our this experiment podcast series about Ted Lasso. If you're following along, this will encompass the first five episodes of season one of Ted Lasso, which we have just all binge watched together. And in a very unique experience sort of way, we didn't really talk about it the entire time we were watching
not
it.
Not at all.
It for this moment. So, and as a refresher, we are coming in from three different perspectives, which is Sean has not watched this before, Alex has seen it only once, and in sort of a disjointed way, and I've seen it a handful of times. So, as we jump into, before we jump into this episode, let's set the timer for 45 minutes, as in our first as in the first half of a football match. And if we hit 45 minutes, we have the opportunity to go up to 5 minutes of extra time, but we shall see.
Let's tighten up those lines.
All right. Tell me when
the clock's rolling.
And starting it now.
And now it's time for kickoff. All right, fellas. So, even though we've been watching this for the last 2.5 hours together, what are your first impressions of the show? I guess, Sean, I'm most interested in your perspective.
I love it so far.
Okay.
It's a very nice show. I mean, obviously,
it's nice.
It's got a lot of heart. But I think you all, from our other podcast, if you know us from our other podcast, you know that I love good conflict. And I think that this show does it really well. And I think that one of my favorite parts about this show is the Rebecca Welton character, the team owner, is just such a well-done, complicated person. I guess I should look up what the actress's name is. It's
Hannah, the woman that tortures Cersei in the prison.
Yeah, Hannah Waddingham.
There you go.
She's amazing.
I wrote that down. I was like, Rebecca is like an incredibly amazing character. She like brings so much to the show, because right away you're like, well, there's not really, she's definitely cast as the antagonist after the pilot episode. Like at the end of the pilot, you're like, oh, she's the bad guy.
Right.
This is the producers type thing. She's trying to take down this team from the inside while acting like she isn't. But very quickly you start to feel a little sympathy for her, and they do such a good job just in the pilot of like, you just get that glance at the tabloid and you realize like, she's been through the ringer with her husband, and she's not happy about doing this. She's in a, she's between a rock and a hard place.
I almost want to see her succeed in casting her revenge on her on Rupert.
She's not a villain at all. Bad rich dude.
Rupert.
She also is making these very quick decisions at the very beginning in the pilot that we see, which is, she's fired the manager.
Right.
She's getting rid of her art. She offers it to Higgins, who says no. And she's like, yeah, should have taken it. Auction pile. So she's immediately making these quick decisions to kind of sort of change the state of the franchise. And part of that comes in bringing in Ted Lasso. Obviously, that's such a long-term decision, and is, I think, intended to be a very slow burn on her part to kind of cause that sort of self-destruction, sabotage of the club. But obviously, it plays out in a different way. But I'm glad. I mean, I'm interested that that's who you latched onto first, because I agree. It's a very well-written character.
Yeah.
Someone,
I mean, honestly, at first I was a little bit, I got a little bit worried for a second when she like, she's like giving him a tour of the club. And then she's like, oh, you didn't know like the press conference is right now.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's weird. Like, why would she not, why would she just not even talk to him about the press conference right beforehand, and then it's like, oh, okay, so she's setting him, setting him up. But yeah, I think that Rebecca might be one of my favorite parts of it, and also I'm really enjoying Jason Sudeikis. I'm enjoying Ted Lasso.
He's cloyingly folksy and like charming in a way that's like, it comes on pretty thick, like his the way he compliments people and that sort of like relentless optimism. And we'll get to that later, but the show does a good job of putting you in this position of a lot of characters in the show, which is he's kind of irresistible. As much as you want to roll your eyes and be like, this guy, you just kind of can't do it for that long. And eventually he kind of makes you smile. And then eventually you're just like, oh man, like it'd be so great to have a, just have a barbecue with this guy. It must be so fun.
And when people in real life have these sort of mannerisms, it often feels like it could be an act.
Yeah.
But when you spend enough time with, in this case, it's a TV character, of course, but it feels more genuine the longer, the more time you spend with them, the more you see it in practice. And the fact that it doesn't really stop or change or go away.
Yeah.
Even with adversity, he keeps up with his relentless optimism and his unstoppable sort of positivity. And the show does a really good job of showing other characters kind of confronting that, whether it's the journalist Trent Crim from The Independent really being up front and putting him under the microscope with a little notepad with no matter what he's doing, whether it's Rebecca and the line where Ted even says to her that he's got marital troubles because his wife finds his constant optimism so it's a little grating, you know, in his marriage. So it's not a perfect trait. He's not portrayed as a perfect person in any sort of way.
No.
And it's fun to see it kind of wear people down.
Well, it also, it surprises people. It challenges people, whether they have a wall up or whether they don't have a wall. I'm thinking specifically with like Nathan and Higgins. They're almost kind of desperate and for someone to just take them seriously and say hello and know their name and care about them. But it's just as shocking to them as it is to, like, Rebecca, who has this wall up, who's like, I'm not used to people saying this to me. Same with Higgins. I'm not used to people saying this to me. And it's disorienting to both of them in completely different ways. But Jason Sudeikis brings, like, such a charisma and consistency with Ted Lasso. It's irresistible for all of them eventually. And this comes right in the pilot. Like, him and Coach Beard say this when they're looking at Roy Kent in the locker room of like, wait till we win him over.
Yeah.
Like, you look at him now. And so they plant the seeds of like, they know that their shtick works. Like, they know that eventually people come to their side. You give them nothing to hate you with. You give them nothing they can latch onto.
That's certainly another favorite part of mine for the show so far is the friendship between Ted Lasso and Coach Beard.
It is
played by Brendan Hunt.
Quickly become an all-time TV friendship.
Yes.
It's so good. Yeah. It's so understated.
I mean, we just watched episode 5, which ends with Ted Lasso and his wife basically deciding to split up. And just that...
heartbreaking.
Yeah. And just that Coach Beard coming in with the pint glass. Not a word spoken.
No dialogue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It gives me hope.
Yeah, you just get the sense they've been working together for a lot of years. They speak each other's language. Clearly, they're devoted to each other. I mean, Coach Beard left Kansas, just went to England with Ted Lasso, learned a new sport, how to coach it.
I'm fascinated by the Coach Beard character. Yeah. I mean, it's like, well, because he's so silent at first that you're just like, well, he must just be a normal guy. But then we see him
not
playing chess without the board at the gala.
He was an Illinois State champ in high school. Like, he's really, really good at chess. That's impressive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's very impressive. Illinois is a state, by the way.
When it came to casting our little show in the roles from Ted Lasso, I was excited that you kind of slotted in as Coach Beard, Alex, because of your affinity for chess.
I thought it was because of my beard.
Perfect. Well, that too. Yes. Yeah.
My beard is still longer. So.
Yeah, Sean has the real beard here.
But we also see them have this sort of balance between Ted Lasso sort of over-talking and over-communicating and Coach Beard not speaking up very much at all. The point where he says, good kid, Ted Lasso says, wow, if you knew Coach Beard, you know how high praise that is.
Yeah,
and we're just tasting the sports mix.
Yeah. And you get... Ted Lasso, who's kind of upfront with the fact that he doesn't know the sport, that he's learning it, and the team's going to give you everything they got. He wants these kids to be the best versions of themselves. Coach Beard is reading the book.
Yes.
He's actually learning about the sport. So there's a little bit of balance where you see that he's got a coaching partner who helps balance out that sort of, I guess it's not inattention to detail.
No.
He's focused on big picture.
Yes.
And Coach Beard is managing the minutiae.
It seems like Ted is the heart and Coach Beard is the brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say so. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that was another... What's Nate? The stomach?
Yeah, I guess.
The gut?
Yeah.
I think, like, another impression just on this... This is the second time I've seen it. And the first time I saw it was, like, one episode... And then another couple hours later, over the course of three flights, like, mm-hmm. that I finished the whole season. And so now seeing it over and over, like, back to back, I get the sense of, like, the show is remarkably unconcerned with the actual football.
You
know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. they don't feel a need to explain how these coaches are translating. You see a shot of Coach Beard reading a book here or there. He's clearly working as best he can to figure out the sport. Mm-hmm. And you quickly get to know that Coach Beard is... Oh, he's an obsessive guy who's going to, like, stay up all night reading and figure out how to be the best coach he can. Mm-hmm. And so you just sort of like, yeah, they're figuring it out. They got it. It's fine.
Well, and I think in comparison to maybe some other sports, movies, and TV shows, I think soccer sets itself up to be a little bit more easy to depict on screen.
Yes.
I think when you think about basketball, that's, like, you know, one of my favorite sports and one that I gravitate. There are, like, very few really good basketball scenes where people actually are, where the actors are actually good at playing basketball. The
right.
skills are so, I think, recognizable for the people that play. Like, you can tell that somebody's never dribbled a basketball
right.
when they're in the middle of a scene and they're supposed to do something.
Right away.
Where in soccer, I think you can do a little bit more of showing... maybe it's the way you don't show an actor's full body. Maybe you just show the running.
Right.
Like, there's a little
That's
bit.
A
those
point.
Movements are a little bit looser on the field or on the pitch, and it's a little more realistic and compelling, I think. Maybe maybe I'm wrong. Maybe people who are, like, very high level soccer players or coaches or, you know, understand the game at a much higher level than I do. Maybe they look at this and they're like, "Yeah, that's all fake."
Yeah,
I mean, obviously
sure.
it's a TV show, but it didn't take me out of it when I'm watching.
Yeah. It's a tough job where they're like. The show is not burdening itself with, like, we need to introduce soccer to people who are watching this show. They don't need to do that.
I mean, I was just thinking about how, like, it's... I was wondering if it was going to be confusing or if it was going to... I was going to learn a lot about soccer watching this. But it is kind of a... It's kind of a classic trope of, like, a lot of the strategy that we hear is, like, you got to pass more to your teammates.
Yeah, they're fast on the outside.
Yeah, it's not all about you out there. It's about us.
Yeah, it's a little similar.
I mean, I think, too, soccer itself is pretty intuitive. And that even if you didn't know any of the rules, it's like you know that there are two teams, and you know that when the ball goes in the net, that's the goal. And the score is often as simple as 1-0. So you can watch it from that perspective, even if you're not super in tune with all the, you know, the different rules or the teams or the players or the formations or whatever.
Right.
You know, you can still enjoy it from that perspective. You know?
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, one of my first impressions from rewatching this again, the show is incredibly tightly written.
It's very slick.
There are so many callbacks and little inclusions of things that I didn't even notice the second or third time that I'm catching now.
Yes. Mm.
So, like, just little jokes that they write in that come back later. It's very, very, very impressive the way they do it.
I agree.
It doesn't hit you over the head, and it's not so, it's super subtle, and I don't feel like the show goes out of its way to acknowledge it either.
Mm.
So there's a lot there. I didn't notice, for example, there's a scene that we see of Keeley in the vodka ad with the lion.
Yeah.
And then you see it as, like, an ad on the side of a door,
right?
In an establishing shot, and it's like, oh, I didn't notice that really.
Right. Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So the show does a very good job in that regard. It makes it feel like all of it was written all at once, which I think one thing that I'm also very interested about this show is the way that it feels like an American show and a British show at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Like there's something really fun about a lot of American sports movie tropes.
Yeah.
Being dropped into this sort of British atmosphere against the backdrop of English Premier League football, which is one of, like, the, you know, biggest sports leagues in the entire world, if not the biggest league in the entire world.
Yeah.
So it's fun to watch Ted Lasso's sort of folksy optimism portrayed against what can be kind of the, I don't know, like the...
Soggy temperature.
Yeah, exactly. Just like the,
I've heard this, like, I have a friend who's from England, and he's saying, like, here we're raised to sort of be like, it's going to work out. You're going to be okay. Like, that optimism. And I think he's like, that's not the case in England. Like, you're raised to expect the worst, and you're raised to be like, it's probably not going to work out.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's just a general feeling, I think, that settles over a population. I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe that isn't true if you're listening and you're British, but That's what I've been told by people.
We talked about men in blazers earlier.
Yeah.
And Roger Bennett, who's very, very gung-ho about America. He just wrote a book about how he, you know, his life growing up and his want to come to America, his fascination with America. And one of the, he's an Everton fan. And one of his constant things that he used to, he always talks about, like, when his team loses, having to take a sad nap, drink a little bit of Malbec. And the other phrase he always says is, evil always wins. So there's an element of that that's contrasted against, like, American sports optimism.
I was going to say, I mean, it's like we were saying, it seems at first that Rebecca Welton's going to be the villain. Then it seems like Jamie Tart is the villain, but I have a feeling that his reckoning is coming and he's going to change and grow. And then, I mean, I guess Rupert is kind of a villain, but I don't know how much he really matters except to Rebecca. Mm-hmm. It feels like the only real villain so far is just cynicism in general really what Ted is out to defeat.
And that's the thing where, like, this show refuses to present any character as one-sided. Like, you never are just getting... Even the fans at the pub, like you saw in that last episode, in episode 5, even now they're still like, yeah, but he's a nice guy. Like, they've met him, and so they're not just, like, totally dumb, just
hooligans.
Like, screw this guy. Yeah, they're starting to feel like, yeah, but, like, we love our team, and he's doing his best. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And even like, the bartender, too, I noticed... So the bartender at that pub is, I was like trying to track who's the first person that Ted turns around. And I think it's the bartender because he has that little interaction where he's like, I'm a very visual learner, so thanks for that. Yeah. When she does the wanker thing. And then when the whole pub's booing in the next episode, she just has a little like, give him a chance at least.
Yeah.
And she's the first person to kind of turn, which I thought was a nice touch. And all the minor characters are like that. And the show just will never... paint anyone with a broad brush, and it's really respectable.
Yeah,
it's hard to do.
There's an element of Ted Lasso's sort of way, the Lasso way. Not only does it wear people down, but it also brings them in. So I think for a character like Rebecca or Trent Crim or Jamie or whomever it is, he has to wear them down. Roy Kent, he has to wear them down.
You got to dip that biscuit in some milk.
Exactly, soften them up. Those tough cookies. Yeah. But for a character like Nate or like Higgins, or maybe it's some of the hooligans, or maybe it's the bartender. Mm-hmm. Like they can just kind of bring. He can kind of bring them in.
It's just gravity. Know? It's like
There's a magnetism or a charisma about him that's very undeniable, which is which is very fun to see. Like play out on screen.
Something that stood out to me this time is the way they get exposition done in that first episode. I mean, that's always an issue with pilot episodes or with anything. It's like, how do you provide the exposition in a non-cheesy way? And this one was so good. Like I say, you get a glimpse of these tabloids from the owner, and you just sort of that conversation with the ex-coach, you get the sense, oh, okay, she has the team, used to be run by this guy, didn't end well, she's shaking things up. You get the Scott Van Pelt.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
On the Sports Center guy.
Oh, who is, I guess I don't
know.
He's an
ESPN anchor.
I remember the scene. Oh, okay, he's a real guy. Got it.
That was just done perfectly.
Yeah.
It felt just like a real segment.
Yeah.
And Scott Van Pelt does a really good job.
I love that video that they show of Ted Lasso dancing.
Yeah.
That's like one of the first moments where it's like, okay, I think I'm going to like this show.
Yeah.
And that's the first glimpse you get of Ted Lasso. Yes. That's it. I just thought that was all really well done to get us to the place where Ted Lasso arrives. And then for me, the first time I watched it, the mystery was, what is he doing here? Like, he seems like he was happy in Kansas. He's got a wife and kid. Why is he here? And they slowly show you that hand as far as like that first phone call where he says, I love you. She doesn't say it back. And you start to be like, okay.
Yeah.
He's escaping something and you don't know what. But it's not heavy-handed the way they do it.
Well, I actually too, I about that whole storyline, I appreciate that it's like we get a glimpse that something's wrong between them with that first phone call, and then it's not really addressed again until this fifth episode. And then it works itself out. Like, I mean, the problem's kind of over now, right?
They don't drag the show down with it.
No.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate because I think some of that drama can get dragged out too much.
I think, too, that there's something very... I think it helps the show tremendously that Ted Lasso doesn't have a love interest that's developed over the course of this season. That there is a romantic element of it and there is a dramatic element to it. Like, there is a storyline that needs to get worked out. But it's not as if Ted Lasso flies to England, and what do you know? He meets somebody who works for the team, and they strike up an unlikely romance. You know, like I think that would be a lot clunkier.
You'd expect that almost.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. Like it's not as if Ted and Rebecca are on this path to, you know, they haven't planted those seeds. You know, and I think the show is much better for it. That each of those characters has a more compelling individual story that's not necessarily tied up in falling in love with each other. You know,
right?
Yeah.
Speaking of romance, though, the other characters we haven't really talked about are Keeley Jones and Roy Kent and Jamie Tart. I feel like there's a bit of a love triangle here now with the way that this fifth episode ended.
I can't wait for you to hear this one particular line later in the show.
I'm excited.
Yeah, and that plays out a lot at the banquet scene or the charity banquet they have, which we'll get to the individual episodes. But yes, that's really the epicenter of romance in this. Mm-hmm. And again, it allows us to get multitudes of Jamie Tart. And for at least for a while, it's like, oh, there's this bad side of him. Oh, and there's also this bad side of him.
Yeah.
But they do a good job of reminding him. It's like he's this 23-year-old rich footballer. And so even when I'm watching it, you're like, that guy sucks, but I get it, but like he sucks.
Well, they keep giving him these moments where he thinks about it, and then he does the wrong thing.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's how I know, eventually, I assume, we're going to get to he thinks about it and does the right thing.
Totally. And that's, like, that part where we've sort of mentioned this, like, this American, optimistic American coming into a dour British situation. Mm-hmm. And sort of that butts heads. And I'm glad that the show doesn't, it struggles with Ted Lasso, everyone there. And like, he's constantly called, he's mentioned as like Yankee Doodle, you know, yee-haw bullshit.
Yeah.
Like
Ronald McDonald.
Yeah. And they're all just like, okay, we get your shtick. Like they call him right away. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, oh, okay. Like it's like he has to prove to them that he's not doing an act, that he's real. And that takes a really long time. And so I'm glad that they don't just have people being like, oh, this guy's optimistic. Cool. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just like, don't bring that in here, please.
Yeah.
And he has to find other ways to reach people.
Yeah.
Including, you know, asking people like how they tick and doing a little of his research and sort of that subtle coaching that Trent Crim writes about. It's fun to watch that play out in a really real way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think Roy and Jamie are portrayed as foils for one another. They're almost like the same, similar players portrayed at different points in their journey. I mean,
right.
Roy at the banquet talks about how when he was a young upstart, there was an old guy and he hated his guts too. And they butted heads. And now he feels that same way with Jamie. And even after that, Jamie says, "See you dying." And Roy just laughs it off, which I think, you know, they're you get a better sense for each of them by consistently putting them against each other, you know? Mm-hmm. And then Keeley obviously is kind of in the middle of that. And she has that line where she says, you know, when I was 18, I started dating a 23-year-old football player. And now that I'm almost 30, I'm still dating a 23-year-old football player, you know? I mean, there's an element of that for sure. I think I like the way that the show, really early on, Ted Lasso referred to her in the headline as a woman whose relationship status does not define her. I like that, you know, that the show kind of goes out of it.
Yeah.
It's trying at least, you know, even though that love triangle thing is pretty well-trod territory. You know?
Yeah. I thought at first that I wasn't going to enjoy those characters as much, actually. Mm-hmm. But I found myself really liking that story. Like, I don't know. I guess I'm thinking about, what was that space show with Steve Carell?
Space Force.
That was a show that really had some weak, side characters.
Supporting characters.
Supporting story arcs. And this is a good example of, I feel like every storyline I'm still interested in, still invested.
They're so intertwined, and it's all really contained to this team. So like even physically, they're all passing through the same locations all the time, and that really helps it feel like there's not a lot of fat on the show, as opposed to other shows where people are going other places, they live different places, there's sort of other storylines develop. That does happen here, but it's all together, and all the relationships are interdependent with each other, and so it just works. It's very clean. It's there's just not a lot of fat on the show.
Yeah.
Even though it's such a, it's just like dripping in sweetness. And it's like even watching the show, there's moments where I'm like, okay, like come on.
Yeah.
But then it's like, I can't resist. I just can't really resist it. Like,
I think another yes. I mean, that's kind of the point, right? I think I think that's the overwhelming piece of the show. But I think another way it balances is not just an English sensibility that the show is contrasted against, but it's a very multicultural sensibility. I mean, I think Sam as a character is another way that they bring it in, where you know, Ted Lasso is bringing a very, I guess you can call it a very stereotypical American sort of approach with his coaching style and his optimism, whatever, the hope, you know, as they'll talk about later. But when he tries to give Sam that little army man, he says, I don't have the same fondness for the U.S. military that you do.
I love that.
Like, well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know? So there's, and we haven't seen a lot from him, but Richard, who's later, but later in the show, Zorro, who comes in later. Danny Rojas. Like, these other characters have different points of views that they bring in. So,
God, I can't wait for you to meet Danny Rojas. He just comes in like a sunbeam.
It's just, the way that the show is able to balance these things together, I think, is really, really compelling and very impactful, you know?
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. It's what saves it, I think, from being super saccharine or being overly sweet. I mean, it's the show, the fact that the show can still feel the way it does, not just kind of be like, okay, you know?
Totally.
For the most part, that doesn't really hit me in that way, you know, which is good. Like, I think. Yeah, it's an achievement, really.
Yeah.
And even that little interaction that he has with the driver when he first arrives, first episode.
Yeah.
And it just comes back later. You don't see him keeping up with that guy, but he's like, that's where he decides to go eat. And it's a very subtle way. And then it's like, oh, that's his family's restaurant. And it touches on all of these things that make Ted Lasso, why everyone is sort of drawn to him, which is he actually means it. He actually cares.
I can't believe he cooks all those, bakes all those cookies.
Oh, and the cookies, biscuits with the boss.
Yeah.
Well, and a lot of the, one thing I noticed too on this rewatch is that the side characters become, even like, obviously we see like the way that he brings in the people along for the journey, but it's not just the people that are in his way or like the people that have lines necessarily, like the way he brings in Shannon.
Yeah,
the student who you know is really good at dribbling through people's legs and that kind of thing. The way that she they bring her in, like the singer guy that they bring in.
Oh right, yeah,
Cam Cole.
Cam Cole.
Up, they show him at least two other times.
Cam, whoever.
Yeah, while he's walking down the street.
That's right.
So they do a really good job.
I
of
love
like
a troubadour
utilizing. Yeah, exactly. Of utilizing all of that, which I thought was very very well done.
And
Higgins, I mean.
What a great
we'll talk more
character.
About Higgins.
Yeah.
Higgins and Nathan are really I perk up every time they're on screen. I mean Nathan's just a perfect character.
Yes.
They do a really great job of like I think for a character that talks so much in Ted Lasso, same with Rebecca, she has a lot of dialogue. And then it's balanced very well by Coach Beard, who has very, very momentary interjections, but they're always said with a lot of confidence and a lot of very like he knows exactly who he is. Nate, who's speaking up like he's really got to put all of his effort into saying anything, you know? And then Higgins.
But he's totally committed to his job. And we meet Nate when he's sprinting across the field going like, don't touch the grass. Get off the grass. And so he comes in like, this is his job. He's doing it. He realizes the coach and he's like, take all the grass you want. Put more in the bin.
I love that scene where Trent is inquiring about Nate. And who is Nate the Great? He's like, over here. Somebody's been walking the dog. Found another poo.
He's rolling it off the field.
It's the man who's written this, come up with this play, who's brainstorming the offense for a Premier League attack. I do like the way that they kind of return to this element of Rebecca outwardly sort of showing this face of, I really want the team to succeed, Ted, and I'm behind you and I believe in you. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of a lot of these episodes, she said, fuck. You
know,
it happens again and again. I thought the Trent Crim, the independent episode, is particularly effective because we hear the words read from Higgins.
Yes.
And he even has to say, remember, these are not my words.
Yeah.
And then, like, it's written in a way that's very effective. Like, you know, and even if he does fail, I won't gloat.
Yes.
You know, I thought that was a very, very, like, well done way to express it, the way to kind of explain the Lasso way.
And that's ultimately what the Lasso way is at the end of that article, is like, I'm rooting for him, and no matter what happens, I'm rooting for you. That's sort of how I feel like how Ted Lasso is approaching all of this and all of his interactions with his players. And I think it's I'm curious, I mean, we'll probably get to this too, but with the second half of the show, this is a great natural split. Obviously it's the middle of the season, but it sort of ends with like Ted Lasso at a low point.
Yeah.
And the team has won a game and maybe they're going to be decent now, but this threat of relegation is always there. And this feels like that's also what Ted Lasso is going through and sort of like being relegated even in his own life by his family of like, I'm out and I don't want to be, but I'm going to have to be okay with that. And so his own optimism is now like, hey, can you believe your own speeches? Can you believe your own thing that you teach people?
Yeah.
That's sort of what's set up for the second half.
And his relationship almost challenges him to do the opposite of what he's been doing now. He says to his wife, Michelle, I've never given up on anything.
Yeah,
you right. know? And that's the difference, because he's so invested in these players and the team that he doesn't give up. That's his whole thing. And he has to do the opposite in his own relationship.
Yeah.
I would say his marriage, but it is his relationship.
But she does say, you're not giving up, you're just letting me go. You know, you're just doing something that's hard. Yeah.
But I keep using effective, but the way that they invert that, is really strong.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's a really good choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like this show feels more American or more British to you?
There's something British about, and maybe I'm wrong. I'm not even sure what show I'm thinking of, but I feel like issues arise and then it's not really a big deal. Mm-hmm. Like the picture of him wiping ketchup off of Keely's face.
Yeah.
Like those things pop up and then they never, like you're like, oh shit. And then it never really pans out to anything catastrophic. I feel like that feels British to me, but maybe I'm wrong.
It feels 50-50.
Yeah.
It does feel more American, I think, given the subject matter and given some of the way they use like music cues and I don't know, there's something, the pacing of it feels a little more American. There's some cartoonishness to the characters that feels a little more American than British, but again, it's really close. It's a pretty close split for me.
I think that's one of the best things about it is that I don't really know.
Yeah.
Like obviously the way that it ends on high notes so often or gives you those like moments of uplifting, like that sentiment is very, I feel like it's very American, but at the same time, the overall sensibility and obviously the location is so clearly British. I haven't watched the show in a little while, but did you guys watch Catastrophe?
Yeah,
oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, like the way that they have an American guy in that. I feel like that show skews much more towards British. But,
definitely.
But it it's the only show I can think of that's comparable where you have like this sort of balance with that. You know?
Right.
Yeah, British shows tend to be a little more comfortable in letting the tension just kind of hang for longer. And this seems to resolve that tension, like you said, quicker. Maybe the biscuits are the perfect analogy for this show, which is that it's an American making a British treat. And it's really good.
Yeah.
But it's... You know, he's making it. Maybe he's putting more cream and heavy butter into it.
Barbecue sauce.
Yeah, yes. Barbecue sauce. But that's sort of what
he's
the show
deep
is.
He's frying the cookies?
I mean, these kinds of shows are really interesting. Like, it makes me think of a show called Lilyhammer. Did you ever remember seeing that advertised on Netflix?
I remember seeing it on Netflix, yeah.
Can't remember his name, but from Sopranos.
Yeah, the Van... what's his name?
Yeah, yeah.
I could have told you his name, Steve Van Sant or something.
I feel like that's his name. But he's in, you know, I mean, they're in Scandinavia or in Sweden, and it's it's hard to tell. It's like, is this an American show or a Scandinavian show? It's hard to tell.
Yeah, I love that contrast and that setting. That's just, I think, like really, really, really interesting. And one thing I was drawn to early on, Sean, in the first episode, you were like, oh, you noticed the music. How do you guys feel about the music in this show? I think it's a very unique part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely part of what kind of makes it feel like such an uplifting show. The music is very, it's that guitar, like just very
the acoustic guitar
optimistic.
Is such a signpost.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, here comes a moment. Like it's, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the theme song is a bit of it. A lot of the outro songs are in that zone. I mean, it's Marcus Mumford who does the theme song. So there is that piece of it, you know, it's folk music for the folksy guy, you know.
Yeah.
So it lives together. Yeah.
Yeah.
I honestly don't love the music of the show.
Okay.
It's a little, the show's already so sweet and the music feels like there's too much frosting on the cake a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need it. I could do for something a little different. The Mumford.
I don't love Mumford and Sons or even like Mumford and Sons, but but I think it fits. I mean, it puts it for me, just like starting the pilot, like right away, like I got the tone, got the vibe of the show.
Yeah.
And so that I think works.
Yeah, that was something that, I mean, you mentioned something about the music. I don't remember exactly.
I did. I like the music.
Yeah. And I mean, I think overall it's pretty well done. I agree that there are a lot of times where it can be a little over the top, you know, in those moments. And Yeah, they do a really good job of like the little acoustic guitar cues in a lot of the moments. I noticed that when there's a scene really early on where Ted is holding the door for Rebecca and it like waits a long time and they hit the same harmonic note again and again and again and again, and again, which I thought was just like an interesting sort of cue.
Oh, but, yeah, nice. Yeah,
it was just something I thought I'd mention.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. We gave ourselves a very strict 45-minute time limit, and my idea or the premise would be like, let's just see how we feel, you know, first impressions, talk through it, and then we can go episode by episode. We have 12 minutes left. we've done quite a bit on first impressions.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I guess
let's just go through moments.
We can go episode by episode if you want, or we can take it whatever you guys wrote down, whatever you noted, whatever you want to talk about. I think, how do you want to take this? We got 12 minutes left plus stoppage time if we need it. So
I mean, I love the idea of looking at the episode so that we don't really miss anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like we've talked about the pilot quite a bit. Mm-hmm.
I just went through and made some notes per episode. We can just jump through real
quick.
That sounds
great.
What did you note? Cool. What did you note?
Coaches calling each other coaches. I love that. There's a few professions where they do that.
Yeah.
Like doctors always refer to each other as doctors. Chefs. They always call each other chef.
Yeah, yeah.
Coaches is one of those.
Yeah.
And I love those like non-high professional jobs where they still call each other that.
Yes.
I coached basketball for a year and got to feel that. Like, oh, I'm in this
coach?
Club.
Yeah.
It's a nice feeling.
Oh. Yeah.
Where do you fall on the GIF-JIF battle?
GIF.
GIF.
Yeah. It's a GIF.
Because the actual word, the GIF stands for...
Grouped image file?
I thought it was generated... Or is it graphics interchange format?
Oh, right.
Wow, I don't know.
But
both of those, yeah, exactly.
Because it's graphics interchange.
Graphics interchange format.
I think graphics, so you go with GIF.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's graphics. Anyway,
yeah.
That's where I stand on it.
True. Yeah, whoever's,
that's where you should too.
Yeah. I very confidently said the wrong definition, which is a very American thing to do.
Yes. Tried your best. Yeah. That's all I had from the pilot.
I mean, if we want to go by the pilot, I mean, I just thought it was very interesting the way that you give everyone like the first impressions you get don't linger for very long.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like in a lot of other, like one thing that I notice about this show is that so much happens in 10 episodes.
Yeah.
Not only does it develop all the characters, but like you have to, you know, put them in gameplay. You have to put them in situations where the players are supposed to develop personally. Mm-hmm. You have to give Ted Lasso opportunities to coach, but also opportunities where the players don't really listen to his coaching. Like, and then you have all the games that have to play and their season that comes together. And then you layer on like the banquet and the photo shoot and all these other things. There's so much that happens. It's not it's not the same as another sitcom where you have a couple episodes to kind of learn who characters are. You know,
right.
They do a really good job of, I think, showing without telling, you know.
I mean, that was the other thing with the pilot, and I think Alex pretty much said this, but it just the way that they very, very quickly set it all up. Like, this is Ted Lasso. He's going to England. He doesn't know anything about soccer.
Yeah.
Like, let's just get to it.
Don't need to meet Ted Lasso until he's coming out of the airport.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like on the plane over.
I just was watching Hacks. People really like Hacks, and I'm gonna watch more of it. But the pilot of Hacks, I don't think does a good. That's a good example of maybe like them struggling a little bit with setting up the rest of the show, and it's done really well here.
I think like I see this as the first two or three episodes kind of grouped together, which is like Ted at the club trying to bring people in. The press is kind of this sort of press and the fans are kind of antagonizing forces.
Just getting the car started.
Yeah, and he wins them over. And then you have the banquet in episode 4 and then the game in episode 5. Mm-hmm. I thought the banquet was really interesting because he gets an opportunity to put Jamie and Roy at the same table and make
parent
a fight.
Trap, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's it's not a bottle episode, obviously, but it brings people together in the same room and allows things to happen. It brings Rupert back into the fold, making this sort of surprise appearance. And there is something that's very like, I'm trying to think of the right word. I feel sinister that he can come in and do whatever he wants and everybody loves him.
Yeah.
You know?
He is the real villain.
Yeah.
Of the show.
That in the public eye, like he can kind of do no wrong because he's very charismatic and he delivers a good line into a microphone, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the entrance of a supervillain where he opens the door from the back and just yells out in the middle.
Yeah.
Crowd. Totally. Who is he? The Joker?
You know? And it's it's another thing too that Rebecca can't do anything about it makes it him even like more terrifying, I think.
Totally.
She's
and he
she's
can just
already knows. She's like, I can't do any.
Money you need.
The goal was above 800,000 pounds, and he waited till the very end
to be like, he's a million.
To drop above it. Yeah. So you got your goal. Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh.
He's even got the white jacket, so he like, stands
he's
out.
He's a total Bond villain. Like,
exactly. Yeah. It's very funny.
Yeah.
Episode two, we went through everything. I also wrote down some of my favorite quotes, and this one was just lose the ponytail. Like, do you remember the first thing you said to me in Kansas? Lose the ponytail?
Mm-hmm. Episode two, directed by Zach Braff.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
One other thing that I think is worth mentioning is that Bill Lawrence is an executive producer on the show, and he was kind
from
of
Scrubs.
From Scrubs.
Yeah. Wow.
So I was curious to see if you guys saw any sort of overlap.
It does have a Scrubsy vibe.
It does kind of have a Scrubsy vibe. Yeah.
A sudden shift with the music that's like, now we're serious. Like,
yeah.
This is a real that's moment true. We're about to have.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah, that's wow.
I remember back in October listening to, there's this podcast called The Watch where they interviewed Bill Lawrence and they talked to him about like making the show and going to England and kind of immersing themselves in soccer culture. Mm-hmm. One thing I brought it up to you before, Sean, is that he mentioned the difference between like film crews in the US and the UK and that the US, they will go, you'll go have really long days and you'll to get the shot, to get everything you need to be done, you'll like go really long. Mm-hmm. And in the UK, it's like 5 o'clock, nope, we'll come back tomorrow. Like that. Yeah. That's what he cast as the major difference.
That is so. That's so funny because that literally sounds impossible to me to make a movie. You would never finish. Oh man.
Mm-hmm. Anything from episode two?
Not specifically that I wrote down. I mean, so much of what I kind of came up with was like, what could be fun discussion questions for us, you know, to kind of take it in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I thought like one thing that really stands out from this is like the fact that it seems like Ted Lasso is not taking this seriously with the party, with the birthday party,
right,
that kind of thing. But yeah, obviously that's part of them not being on his side yet, or not really seeing kind of his way yet. You know,
he's got to do some like foundation work first. Mm-hmm. It seems like get the shower water pressure fixed, then we can talk about winning games.
Yeah, it's just like I'll listen to you. I'm taking you seriously. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't care that no one else is yet. He's like, he knows he'll get there. He's like, it'll take some time.
It's like the results will come once you change the foundations, you switch out everything else.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, as we move,
Higgins acid reflux is just a great little detail in this show.
5 minutes left. Okay. Boys.
And something I haven't really noticed before. I mean, like it's a subtle thing, but yeah, it's, I noticed it more this time.
Just like when he's asked to do something that. She's like, I really like him. Yeah. Funny little thing. He's a really good actor. He's really good.
I really
love
him.
Any moment where he gets to dance.
Yes.
Or express himself physically. It's so funny. You can really cut loose. Yeah.
Trent Krim. Can we talk about Trent Krim?
Oh,
third one. I'm obsessed with Trent Krim. Everything about
him. Give us what you got. Yeah.
His look, his hair. The way he's kind of slinky, how he moves. He holds his glasses in a very comforting way to me. I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
His voice. I just want to be Trent Krim. Man.
I want more Trent Krim. Are we going to get any more Trent Krim?
All will be revealed.
All will be revealed. I love that they're both struggling through the hot Indian food.
That's a really great.
Such a funny little bit.
I do like, I like when he's just like, I cannot eat this.
He starts to ask a question, then it's like,
yeah.
Even this like icy British journalist is like and I thought it's incredibly well written, his article, and it seems like that's exactly what that character would have come to, which is like, I can't just trash the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really doing his thing, and they visit the school together, and his outfit, everything about Trent Krim is appealing to me.
Yeah.
That moment when he leaves.
I don't know why.
I agree.
I want to see him. I want to watch him on screen.
I do too.
I agree with you in that regard. I love when he chops the like popperdom in half and he's like, symbolic gesture. Let battle commence.
Yes.
You know? And then at the end when he is like, I have to leave, Ted says, I genuinely enjoyed spending this time with you. And he goes, you really mean, like, that,
you
don't
really
you?
Mean that, don't you?
There's something really great about that.
Yeah.
And there's something very, I think we can call it Midwestern, about like needing to like eat enough of the food to make be respectful.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. That totally resonates.
Absolutely.
I remember one time just going with Chris Griffith to somebody's house and like, we were just picking them up.
That's one of our
friends. Yeah, that's one of our friends. Just, and like, we were just going to pick up somebody and take them to a party, and like, the mom just kept bringing out like food, and Chris was like, oh, this is wonderful, thank you so much, and just kept eating and eating so much, and like we left and I was like, dude, like, are you starving or something? He's like, I ate before that. I just didn't want to be impolite.
I know the feeling.
I was just like, totally I did not know that was a thing.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, that was... Oh, another thing I noted that I noticed from this with Coach Beard, this is good to cut into the next episode, is that in every single scene Coach Beard is in, his hands are either... His arms are folded or his hands are in his pockets. Hmm. Every single scene, except at the banquet when he's talking the chess moves with the girl and he's leaned up against the wall.
Yeah.
That's the only scene. I was like, I wonder if that was intentional to always have his... Always arms folded or in his pockets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But he's vulnerable when he's talking chess.
But the game
chess.
Before the dame, huh?
We only have 2 minutes left for episode 4 for the children. I feel like we talked about
that.
Sure.
A bit, and even same with Tan Lines.
Nate reveals that he was an understudy for Anita in West Side Story.
So funny. Yeah.
When he says that, Coach Beard kind of squares up and turns towards him in this really way. Like they all, there's a weird musical undercurrent. Like
a lot of details musicals. For musicals.
Yeah,
it's really funny.
With Nate again, it when he makes the box,
another box.
Suggestion box, the first suggestion box, and he's like, telling him that he made it with his niece, he's like, I really enjoy glimpses into your personal life.
I love making crafts. I love glimpses into your personal life.
Yes, yeah. That's it.
We peel back yet another layer of the Nathan Onion.
The juicy beautiful layer of the Nathan Onion. Oh, it's great. I can't wait for more.
Yeah.
Mm.
The alone scene with Rebecca outside the banquet when she's talking to Ted Lasso about not wanting to be alone. Mm-hmm. Heartbreak. It's just brutal, man.
Yeah.
Everything she's been through, and she knows, she's like, no matter what, they're gonna love him, and I'm alone, just like he said I would be. And it's just like,
I know that she's gonna give up on her plan to destroy the team and come around and be all about this. I'm just wondering when it's gonna happen.
Mm-hmm. What a great lead-in to the second half.
Yeah, that's true. Job, dude. Yeah. I do think that we should touch on this episode 5 with the game, because I think that's really important. It is another in-game moment where Ted kind of makes his breakthrough with the team by benching Jamie.
Right.
That was kind of an important symbolic moment.
After he scores the only two goals.
The only two goals. And I don't want to, you know, dip into what's to come, but I think it's really interesting to see there are sort of these like marking moments in the show with the games, the actual gameplay.
Right, yes, right.
Totally. Using Jamie as a decoy before that.
Yeah.
All right, there it is. 45
All right, that's
minutes.
Our time. Do we need to go over for stoppage time? Up to 5 minutes.
Oh, I love when you Doc Brown. Yeah.
The actor. Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's it for me. That's all I got.
No, I think
I'm not taking notes. I'm just soaking in the show.
That's good. You should on your first one.
I'm kind of just ready to get back.
I was
at
trying
it.
To pull just in case we needed some random discussion questions and from the episodes. And here's one that I
one
thought
stoppage time question
was kind of funny. So we see Ted Lasso when he enters his new apartment, take one snack from the gift basket and start eating it.
Uh huh.
If you were to take a snack from the gift basket, what's your first choice?
Oh, I didn't. Oh man, I didn't
if
see what
just
was
a
in
gift,
it.
If any sort of gift
gummy
basket.
Bears.
Oh wow!
If there's gummy bears in the gift basket,
I'm always gonna choose salt over sugar. I'm a savory guy, so I'd probably choose like a pretzel or something, something snacky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was I feel like Pringle is usually like a go-to
that's
snack.
A good one. Yeah, or there's probably some sort of nuts. I'd probably go for those almonds.
Yeah, I either thought,
boring. Yeah, well, I'm not that exciting when it comes to food.
I thought a Pringle or a gummy bear; those are the two things that pop up.
Look at that!
So split the difference Boom. There. Yeah.
This is what makes us a perfect team.
It's the coach bringing us together.
Okay,
look at us.
This wraps up the first half episode of Biscuits with the Boss, our podcast series on Ted Lasso. I hope you've enjoyed this, and I hope you stay with us for the second half. Watch the next 5 episodes of Ted Lasso and come join us for part 2. I hope you'll join us.
See you soon.
That's basketball.